Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. On the show this week, Mossy, Al and I reflect on the international career of John Barclay. We look ahead to a big weekend for both Edinburgh Rugby and Glasgow Warriors. And joining us in the studio today, Sir Bill Gammo and Norman Murray, to reflect on their independent corporate governance review of Scottish Rugby. I'm delighted to be in the studio, not just with Mossy, but also with Big Al. They're both back here at PT Murfield. How are we, gents?
Good, Jamie, yourself?
Yep, not bad, not bad.
You're looking well.
Thanks. I've been hitting the gym.
Have you?
Yeah, I have.
Have you been doing anything at the gym or just going there?
No, good Wi-Fi. No, I've been trying to get a little bit of shape.
He's been deadlifting. Ask him about his deadlift.
Oh, yeah? Big numbers?
Well, you guys are obviously, you know, someone told me it's double your body weight. So what do you think my body weight, what do you think I'll be lifting?
Well, what do you weigh, 25, 30 kilograms?
I struggle with 60, yeah. No, it's going well, thank you. You're looking good yourself. There's no Super 6 the weekend, so we can't really reflect on that. But there was still a lot of rugby. But before we go into rugby, we have to just mention the news that came out yesterday. John Barclay has announced his retirement from international rugby. You guys played with John, know him well. An end of a pretty good career for him, wasn't it?
He's done an incredible amount, absolutely. I've played with John first at Glasgow when he was just a young kid coming through, and he's done brilliantly well. Obviously a great spell down in Scotland. Should say though, it's international rugby he's retired from. He's made it pretty clear he's still got plenty to give to the game, but he's stepping back from international game. But yeah, I mean, he can be incredibly proud of what he's done in that jersey, the way he's led his country. He'll be disappointed it ends in the back of a World Cup. Well, it maybe didn't go exactly his way, but we shouldn't focus on focusing on the great things he's done in that jersey.
Yeah, I was involved in, was it 2005? He got his first cap in 2007 World Cup, but I was involved in the squad. I think you maybe would be as well, Al, when Matt Williams brought him straight out of school.
He was 17, wasn't
he? Yeah, and there was a guy, it was Andy Dunlop from here as well. There was a couple of really young guys, both back rowers, and came in, got a bit of taste for action. You knew that Barks was, you know, it was pretty unique. It was when the kind of poaching or scavenging or jackling was kind of just not long came into the game, and we didn't have many natural scavengers, if you know what I mean, in that body position over the ball. George Smith kind of started it way back when, and Barks had just basically made that his own. So this schoolboy used to come in and steal ball at international sessions just out of nowhere. And if you think about that position, he's got much more to his game than that. Really intelligent player, hard player, just understands the game. A bit grumpy most of the time.
Most of the time.
All grumpy, the time. But it kind of suits that position. And if you think that the greatest risk in that position, I think, is injury. And you've got somebody who's had such a long career internationally. Yes, he missed a couple of years in the middle, and I think you sometimes get that on at the end. But he spanned four World Cups, played in three Rugby World Cups, spanned four World Cups in that really, really kind of volatile position of being over the ball in almost every game he played. But he had more to his game than that, and he still does. And no doubt we'll have a blether with him, but he can be massively proud and of what he achieved, and we set a pretty high standard.
The injury one's a really interesting one, because you're dead right. I mean, he's stayed reasonably injury free. He looked after himself well.
You have to be tough in that position, and no matter how tough you have to be like technically very good. If you get in the wrong position and somebody hits you with a 30-meter run up who's 120 kegs, it's gonna hurt. You know what I mean? It still hurts if you're in the right position, but there's less chance of you getting injured. And he was just so good. Deciding when to get in and steal the ball, then when he did get in, just staying in there.
Part of the Killer Bees, obviously, as well. It's his first, one of his first combinations would have been him, Kelly Brown, and Johnny Beattie, all now retired from the game. So there was, I think we maybe covered this before. There was Bumblebee, which was Kelly, self-appointed. There was Worker Bee, which was John Barclay, and then there was Mel Bee, which was Johnny Beattie.
Johnny's retired, is he?
Johnny's done it.
The end of last season.
I thought
he was still playing a wee bit.
He played in the Bermuda Tens recently, but no, he's done from a club point of view as well.
How far out for John do you think he was thinking about retirement? Was it pre World Cup? Was it after World Cup? And it's hard to speak on someone's behalf, but for your guys' experience, how early does that thought creep into your head?
Well, I think it was openly he thought he'd never play again when that 2 years, was it 2 years he was at the game?
Yeah, about that.
Or out of the international setup playing really well for the Scarlets. So I think his mindset would maybe be after that, any cap he gets back, that was obviously a goal, but anything else he gets back is a real bonus. And he brought that attitude to every cap he got after that in the kind of performances he showed. But I think in terms of retirement, your view and your plan will fluctuate. Sometimes you'll think, oh, that's it, I can't do any more, or I'm going to target the end of the Six Nations, or I'm going to target a summer tour and that's it. But then you get into a groove and that target might move and you might extend it. But I think naturally the old World Cup cycle probably would be in the back of his mind, aiming for it, missing the last one, a big drive to get to that one. And then I think I assume he would know or have a good idea of going into that World Cup, that it would certainly be his last World Cup, but it potentially could be a time to retire then after. But we'll ask him.
I don't ever remember reading anything about you actually announcing your retirement. Does that mean you technically still are eligible to play for Scotland?
I don't think I ever did retire internationally. I don't know. I played my last game against Japan in 2013. But then I was John as well, but I was still playing in Scotland, so didn't retire internationally. But I kind of knew at that stage. I had good conversations with Scott Johnson at the time, who was the head coach. So I knew what my role was. And my role for the last year or so was bringing through the guys like said Johnny, Richie, Gilko. I remember being on the bench and somebody got injured, so there was a space to start, and they brought Gilko in from, he hadn't been involved, and that was a kind of over in France. But for me at that stage, because I knew my role, because we'd had that upfront conversation, it wasn't an issue.
I remember I'm going to step in here. It's right what he's saying, but I remember you being picked for the Glasgow backup against the Scotland in the 20s in the backfield on a Tuesday night, and you were raging.
You've just about got it right. That was just before I finished completely, so I hadn't been playing much, and I played. I'd just come off the Babash tour, by the way, we could do a whole podcast on. But I needed to get some game time, so I played on the Monday night, and it was Glasgow backup versus Edinburgh backup. Jamie Ritchie and a few of the boys were playing for Edinburgh, and I can't remember what happened, but I got clipped. I ended up breaking a finger, injuring a finger, and came off. I was working with Big Jason at the time. He was working as an agent, so sat in Jason White's car and said, "Jace, I'm done." We played the 18. So I played on the Saturday in the 1872. So I played that maybe a half in the Monday night, and then played on the Saturday. And I remember sitting on the Monday night going like that, never again. As these 17, 18, 19 olds are running round me, through me, over me. I remember that one.
It does fluctuate though, doesn't it? I mean, I think because it's such an emotional thing, and it's such a thing, a playing for Scotland, so I play in professional rugby, or any rugby, just being laced with pride, that it's very difficult to have a definitive moment. Like your emotion sways, and sometimes you're like, "Oh no, that's it." And then next time you go, "Oh, I want to keep playing forever." It does. It's hard.
I played that Monday night. Never again. Jace White's car. Played on the Saturday. Beat Edinburgh at Scotland. Pete Horn and I shared man of the match. Ten more years. So yeah, it does fluctuate.
Moving on to the pro teams now. If we go back to last weekend. Kind of a mixed bag of results. Edinburgh, a good away win at Munster, but Glasgow, a disappointing result at home. Go with Glasgow first, Al. Not ideal, was it?
No. And it was a good start to the game. It looked strong, and then bad 10 minutes just in the end of the first half. Leinster scored two good tries, but two tries, Glasgow would be disappointed defensively. They leaked them. They didn't make Leinster work incredibly hard for them. But I think it was the second half that was probably most disappointing, that there wasn't all that many shots fired. Now, don't get me wrong, let's credit Leinster, because not only Leinster have not yet, I don't believe, had their strongest team on the park, but wow, that team's doing well, and defensively Leinster were incredible. But Glasgow were disappointed, first time since 2012 that Leinster have come over and won in Glasgow, so yeah, disappointing. And need to bounce back this week. A huge couple of games against French opposition, who haven't won a game yet, but La Rochelle will be good in Europe.
And you look at the fixtures as well, La Rochelle back to back, and then Edinburgh back to back as well. It's not going to get any easier for them, is it?
December is always massive. Yeah. Like, it's such a key pivotal month in anybody's season, because the momentum you can take out the back of it is huge. And like, I still remember that going back as a player as well, when you, if you come out having had good results, it can springboard you, because there'll be players away on international duty fairly on early on in January. So December is a key month, and you look at Edinburgh and Glasgow, and they're big months for both of those teams.
Yeah, you can't win the league, or you can't cement your place in a quarter final in a European competition, or a playoff place in the domestic competition, but you can play yourself out of it.
You can
this
lose
time
it,
of year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's really important, especially for, as you say, for Glasgow. They need to target, well, they'll target four wins and that, but you've got two tough opposition. La Rochelle away are a French team who play a lot of rugby. It'll be a daunting task because of the quality of rugby they play, but at the same time, that should allow Glasgow to play the same brand. It's not as if you're going to La Rochelle, I don't think, to have an arm wrestle. It'll be quite open, quite loose. La Rochelle lost their first game in the Champions Cup to Exeter, 31-12 at home, so Exeter have been there and won already. They lost their second game away in Sale, so it's unlikely they'll qualify in Europe. So how they approach a game, you might have half an eye on, but for Glasgow, they have to think about their approach, and I think it's an opportunity for them to play the game that suits them, that's successful for them, and get some momentum with the two games back to back before they play the Edinburgh. And they're fifth at the moment in Conference A. Leinster top the conference with 33 points, Ulster 25, Cheetahs 21, and then Glasgow down in 15. So they're even a wee bit off that third place playoff space at the moment. But with a good run of fixtures, that they could, you know, certainly catch up Cheetahs and try and get ahead of them. So it's a big month to start with.
Looking at Edinburgh now, is a great away win. It's not easy to go to Munster. Even when you play them at home, it's never an easy game, but to win over there is a great achievement. Although Richard Cockerell has been quite grounded about that result, and still, no denying it is a good result.
Yeah, well, to win in Munster's good. You kind of look at the paper before you go, and it's a Munster reserve team in terms of names, and it's probably as strong as Edinburgh can go in terms of who they've got fit and available. But Munster, I thought, their young players were outstanding. They're really, really, really tough to break down. Edinburgh will be frustrated because they didn't win by more, but they'll be happy they win, exactly as you say. But on paper, you know, it's easy to say Edinburgh should have won by more, but I tell you what, Munster took a bit of breaking down. Real kind of hard edge, real determined edge to them. And Edinburgh, the frustration will come from not what the names in the team sheet were, but the fact that we're 10-0 up early on and kind of allowed to think they went back to, was it 16-10 down, I think, thereafter, so, or 13-10 down, certainly. So that'll be frustrating, but they got the win. Obviously, they play in Europe, they play Wasps Friday night here, BT Murrayfield, so they've got a win and a draw, Edinburgh, in the first two games in the Challenge Cup. I assume the team will be rotated a little bit as well, so opportunity for everybody to play. They did that, obviously, here the last time, drew with Bordeaux, and then they won over Nagen, so it's a big ask. Wasps aren't firing in the league or really in Europe. They beat Agen at home, but they lost away in Bordeaux, so it's an opportunity for Edinburgh to continue their good form and continue the rotation of individuals, including that good form that probably became their stumble butt last year when they got to that quarter final against Munster, lost out, and then I think the guys were pretty tired thereafter. So much more rotation from Edinburgh, and I expect them to beat Wasps at home.
And it's the result of the weekend against Munster, it's a big result, and I completely agree with what you're saying about the teams that were on the park, but you've got to go there and win, as you say. And that's a big psychological boost to know that Edinburgh can go there and perform and win the game. I think gives them a great amount of momentum going into December, and like Wasps, as you say, not firing. I could easily see Edinburgh winning both of those, and then they go into an 1872 doubleheader in a good place. Edinburgh are ticking away really nicely.
Well, Wasps have got some brilliant individuals like Joe Simpson, Joe Launchbury. They've got Jean de Jong in the midfield, Lima Sopawanga, they've got Fekitoa.
Is Elliot Daly still involved?
No, he moved to Saracens, but they've got Rob Miller at 15, who's good. Kipa Reggie's a flying guy. So they've got quality players, but they're just not quite firing. Who will play this weekend, we'll wait and see. Mm-hmm. But regardless of that, I think Edinburgh at home, with their home form and the bit between their teeth after drawing their last game at home, should hopefully come out top.
The third European game's always interesting, because the third European game
determines the rest of it, really, in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah, and then you look at La Rochelle potentially looking at going like that. Well, we win all four, we've got an opportunity. Lose this one, or don't. No, from a Glasgow point of view.
Oh, they've lost their first two, though.
Yeah, but you could still...
Oh, right, I mean the next four.
Yeah, you could win the next four and still be in it. Yeah. Wasps, exactly the same. Wasps don't win this game. They're big, at home, they're beginning looking at going, oh, right, what are we going to do next week as far as putting a strong team out? So I think after this weekend, we'll know an awful lot more about not just Glasgow and Edinburgh, but everybody else's opportunities and chances.
The strange thing about Wasps, in some ways, without having seen too much of them, the big names like Sopawanga, for example, All Black 10... He's almost not their first choice. So they're playing Jacob Umanga at 10. So if they decide to rest their first choice 10 to play in Europe, they then play. I mean, it's Opawanga plays. So it's like sometimes you see the names without knowing too much of the current form or the form guide. Resting their top players may mean that the more kind of well-known names is the teams you play against, and you know their quality players are not going to click at some time. So it'll be a big ask whoever plays.
And right about now, the Scotland Sevens are about to start their HSBC Sevens World Circuit in Dubai. We'll do a full recap of that tournament next weekend.
They play USA, don't they? Well, Australia first, USA and Ireland.
It's a tough pool.
I said it every time last year, isn't it? Every pool's tough, but Kieran's first tournament as head coach, so we wish them well.
Staying at home though, let's move back to the Fosrock Super 6. There was no games last weekend, as I mentioned earlier on, but we are back in full flow this weekend. Mossy, looking at the fixtures this weekend, what's jumping out for you?
Yeah, there's one fixture on Saturday and two on Sunday this weekend. The Saturday fixture's Southern Knights against Heriot's. So, as we said last week, that Southern Knights still looking for their first win. They've got a draw. Heriot's have lost their last two. So again, that'll be a kind of nail biter. It's 4:30 down at the Green Yard. So, I don't know how that one will go. I think it'll be a nervy affair. I think the Southern Knights are due a win. Their pack have been performing pretty well. Their backs haven't fired as Rob Christie would have liked, but we'll see if that happens this weekend. On a Sunday, 2 o'clock, you've got Stirling versus Ayrshire Bulls, and then Watonians at home to Boroughmuir Bears.
I was speaking to Sean Lennon yesterday, worked for the halftime feature for a live game on Sunday. And he was saying that 55 tries have been scored in the first 3 weeks of the tournament. I guess that just shows you, the attacking element of the game, and that it is a bit more open maybe than the tennis premiership was in the past.
I think it shows the mindset that people are going into it with, which is a real positive, because you could easily go into a new tournament and it's just a kind of edgy start to it. But the teams are going out and trying to play an attacking brand. It suits the players that are involved. Like you look at the squads that have put together, that attacking brand of rugby mostly across the board suits every team, but yes, it's a great start. It shows it's entertaining stuff.
I'm quite surprised at that, because my
thought was more or less
my kind of summation would have been that the games have been quite edgy. They've all been pretty close for the draw. I'm surprised that there'd be so many tries scored, really, because
there's been some pretty high scoring games, although they're tight.
But as we said at the very, I think it was after week one or maybe after week two, the more time they have together, you can visibly see that a lot of the players are physically conditioned better. Mm-hmm. And the more time you've got together, the more organised you become. What's easier to get organised is defence rather than attack. So I thought defences were quite well organised and quite well structured with that added physicality. So you can look at it two ways. Either attack's been really good or the defence hasn't been as good as you'd wished. I'd like to hope the attack's been better, because I actually did think that the defences were looking a bit stronger than they were in the seasons before. So I'm quite surprised there's been that many.
Yeah, and as always, if you want more information around the Fosrock Super 6, simply head to scottishrugby.org. Well, delighted now to be joined by Sir Bill Gamel and Norman Murray here at Scottish Rugby. Thank you very much for your time, gents, and coming along today to chat to us around this report. I'll just jump in with the first question, if that's all right, and this one's for you, Bill. You can just tell us why this review was requested and how you got involved.
I think it was requested about 18 months ago. They'd created this governance review, and then Colin Grassi, who's the chairman, I think probably with the advent of potential money coming in and the complexity, asked me if I would get involved in looking at it. I think the reason that I got involved, though, was rugby's meant a huge amount to me. My whole career has been based around my concept of pick up the ball and run with it, because if you can empower people, give people the opportunity to play on the park in their best positions, you can create wonderful things. And we were successful as a company doing that. And I think having looked at Scottish rugby, there's so much dynamism, there's so much opportunity, but I think we need to provide more clarity in the structure to get everybody aligned as one behind Scottish rugby. So that's what we found is the real benefit of the review that we've undertaken.
And with so much passion and involvement in Scottish rugby for so long, how hard is it in a review like this to, I suppose, not to just go with your gut instinct and your own feelings? And you obviously spoke to, I think it was over 80 or almost 80 different people. So you're marrying what you think and your experiences as well as, more importantly, everybody else's views you've talked to as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, it's an amazing privileged position, because we had conversations with people that I suspect Scottish rugby has not been close to. We had the opportunity to talk to, as you say, 70, 80 different people. And out of that, we got a real common feeling that actually one of the issues was the divergence between the club game and the professional game. And it seemed to us there was a great opportunity to actually provide some clarity. So I think we looked at it from a business point of view. How would you actually run an organization to allocate the capital and resources in the right place? And who should do what in the structure? But perhaps I should pass on to Norman, because Norman has joined me on this review really because of his great strength in corporate governance and the history he's had of looking at organizations.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Yeah, this was an interesting one for me to be involved with because I didn't come to it with quite the same rugby credentials as Bill did, but certainly in terms of understanding how organisations work and what makes them work and how they work well was something I was keen to input in this. We, in the event, saw about 80 people, as you say, Chris, and that ranged from SRU staff, past presidents, council members, board members, chairman of the board, club representatives, sponsors, just right across the board. And when we saw them, the opening line was, this is not minuted, it's non-attributable, and we would just like you to tell us your views on Scottish rugby, how it works, and could it work better, could it be more efficient, could there be more clarity? That was the sort of guideline. And as Bill said, everyone opened up with a tremendous range of views, which we had to distill with our own experience into this report. So that's how we got there. So
Norman, you've been you've been a debenture holder here since 1993.
Yes,
a huge supporter of Scottish rugby, as have many people. And when you look at our stakeholders, ultimately anybody that's ever picked up a ball or bought a ticket to come and watch a game or goes and watches the clubs, does that make it harder then when there's the history and the emotion attached to what you were trying to do as well?
Well, I could get easily caught up in this. I mean, I remember rugby at school. When I was at school, I remember a lot of my friends were internationals, including Bill, and it was an amateur game then. Mm-hmm. So I've seen it right through the professional game, and I hadn't quite realised the difficulties, I guess, Scottish rugby was in about 15 or so years ago in terms of filling the stadium and the way it was run, all of that. So Bill Dunlop did a review at that time, which was, I think, very much needed. But 15 years later, where the professional game is very well embedded around the world, where we have various tournaments around the world, where this stadium is now getting filled up, which is terrific, where we have a business now where there is no debt, it's a £60 million business that is profitable. These are fantastic strides that Scottish Rugby has made over the period, as you say, Al, since I've held my debentures and since I remember at school. But organisations have got to move on. And, you know, there are commercial opportunities around the organisation just now. There's commercial opportunities around sport, which Bill alluded to. And all of these things, plus a changing landscape out there, mean that governance has got to be clear, it's got to be fit for the future. People have to know where the reporting lines are, and people have to know where their accountability is. So this review was really designed to make sure that all of these things could take place.
I think the other thing, Al, is actually the requirement for greater degree of professionalism right across the organisation, where skill sets are absolutely paramount. One of the things I learned early on was to empower people who are better at doing things than I was. And if you look at how Scottish rugby is set up, we really need to, in my view, to have a nominated basis where you get the right skills in the right place. And I know that this will be seen as to be radical, Hopefully it'll be seen to be pioneering, progressive, but I think positive for everybody, because everybody really has one dream, is how as a wee boy or a wee girl do I get out to Murrayfield and do I have that experience? And there's no greater achievement in life. You know, my personal achievement in life is any legacy that I can maybe leave about taking Brave Pills and being positive. But, you know, scoring a couple of tries for Scotland just to get the plug in early on is, you know, my greatest dream, you know, to ever happen. But I think there is such energy and enthusiasm and achievements, but within Scottish rugby, but at the same time, there's so much emotion. And if you can harness that emotion for the good of the country, which is what I think Scottish rugby is doing, but at the same time, look and say, with this changing landscape, we're going to put the right people with the right skill set in the right place. And this is radical because, in my view, the bravery and the boldness of the board and council to basically say they're endorsing the principles of our report, where you have a council of 15, you have a board of 12, that's 27, and we're saying only 7 of those people stay in their chairs, is pretty dramatic. So you must give huge credit, I think, to the vision of Scottish Rugby to ask us to undertake this review.
So you've touched on it there. So give us a bit of detail, if you can, on what we can expect. What does the proposal set out?
I think the proposal basically sets out at its core a real understanding of where accountability lies. And the accountability lies with the main board. It is the job of the board and the independents, along with executives, to set the strategy, to understand how capital is going to be allocated across an organisation. So that is where the ultimate accountability must happen. What we have discovered is that it's really important, I think, to make sure the domestic game is heard and valued and involved. And so we are proposing the creation of a rugby development board. And that rugby development board will have 3 of the execs from Scottish Rugby on it, but it'll have 6 nominated by the clubs going to a nomination committee sitting on this board. And that rugby development board will have a budget that is allocated to them, and then the whole of domestic rugby and the community rugby will be run by that board. So you're basically empowering the clubs to get on domestic rugby. If there's any issues, that's where they go to. That's where the complaints, that's where the opportunities, that's where they go to. But you can't have a silo. So you've got to have a link so everybody understands how they can play their part in Scottish rugby. On the other side, we are creating, or really formalising, I think, a board that was probably there, but more formalising it, a professional performance board. And on that board, there'll be a variety of people, including the performance director. And again, there's the ability to co-opt on a couple of independents if it's believed outside and knowledge and benefit from rugby could be there. But when you look at the main board, which is really responsible for the game as a whole, we're proposing that the existing independent, 3 independent directors and independent chairman remain on this board, on the board. We then appoint, through a nomination procedure, 3 new rugby-based or rugby knowledge skill set people who will be the domestic game, but also the professional game, a skill set that when you sit around the whole table, you sit around the table, you act as one debating an issue, and then there's collegiate responsibility. And of the executives, we're suggesting up to 3 rather than 4, up to 3 of the executives. So your main board is basically all about the governance of the organization, looking at the allocation of capital and structure, and then you have an executive below that, which run the day-to-day business. The performance board has its own board and it reports through the executive up to the main board, and likewise the rugby development board reports up through the executive to the main board. But it provides, in our view, a clarity, but also when you look through the nomination process, an ability for, I think, a lot of people who have fear of getting involved in Scottish rugby coming forward and saying, do you know what, if I only have to attend a board 4 times a year with additional you know, duties maybe, and I'm paid for it, do you know what, I'm up for that. What we've actually got is, you know, tremendous work done by volunteers throughout Scottish Rugby, but you actually are asking a council member at the moment, a council member who sits on the main board and goes to all his meetings, may have 50 meetings in a year, and I don't think that's efficient. So I think we're all about, you know, looking at whoever, wherever they are within Scottish Rugby, ask the question, where do you add value and make a difference? And I think in life, if you feel that you're adding value and make a difference and you're valued, then you release huge energy.
And Norman, a word that Bill used there was radical, the big change. And your experience of corporate governance and working with lots of different companies and I suppose employing corporate governance. This, you said before, you quite often get a mix and match, an amalgamation of different reports of different governance over years that have been added to, especially in governing bodies.
Yes.
But would you say this is a clean slate as opposed to adding to what's existing?
Yeah, no, it's a completely clean sheet, Chris. You know, what we have just now, you know, has worked fine, but it's been added to over the years. Mm-hmm. You know, the bylaws go back a long way. This is a complete clean sheet of paper to say this is an organisation that should, a structure that should work really well. Now, in my experience, only people make organisations work well, so it's going to be the combination of the right people making this organisation work.
And would you, I know it's difficult to answer, but would you see this lasting for 50 years, 5 years? Or does it depend on the personnel as well?
That's a good question, Chris. What we have done, and what's normal with a review like this, is we have put in a provision there that within the next 5 years, it should be reviewed for its effectiveness. Mm-hmm. Because this is a new structure, it'll take a wee while to bed down. Hopefully it should work pretty well, but we may not have thought of everything. Mm-hmm. So within 5 years, it'll be up to the board to say, can we just make sure this is not another radical review within 5 years, mm-hmm. Chris. It's how well is it working? Yeah. And we need to make sure it's working well. So it might involve some little tweaks here and there.
I think the thing, Chris, though, that this is seriously innovative. I mean, I always talk about a business has to have a vision. You have to have a vision. You have to have a focus in the right place. But where's the competitive edge? And I think Scottish rugby will have a real competitive edge if it puts through this structure, because everybody will know where they can play their part. Decisions can be made and the right people will be doing the right things. And I think it'll be the envy of a lot of sporting bodies. Now, I've been on the Sports Scotland board, I was the Institute of Sport board, the Commonwealth Games board. I've been on a variety of different things involving sport. And often they're run by volunteers. Mm-hmm. And I think Scottish rugby's got to a point where you've got to have professionalism right through the organisation. But the volunteers are the heart of Scottish rugby, I understand that. Mm-hmm. So you must have a way that the volunteers feel that they are fully involved through the Rugby Development Board on the wee boy or wee girl having the vision to go to Murrayfield. And, you know, the Super Six to me was really interesting because I was asked independently to come in and be the independent chair there. And I saw fresh energy and dynamism and younger people involved in taking that ball forward. And if you're honest, people of my vintage actually need to get out of the way. We need to find youth coming through and developing game for the future. And I think, you know, as I've said earlier, I think the vision of the board and the council is remarkable, given the, you know, what we're actually asking to happen.
So do you think the vision will change because you've got a different structure?
No, I think...
Because there must have been a strong vision in place for the success over the last few years. So do you think that will be, and that will obviously be enhanced with a new structure, or do you think the vision might change?
No, I think it'll be enhanced and it'll adapt. Mm. I just think there is so much happening in the rugby landscape as a whole. Yeah. There are big questions, but for an organisation to sustain itself, and let's be frank, you know, 6-7 years ago, Scottish rugby was in serious debt and a pretty low turnover. It's been transformed, mm-hmm. and all involved should be given great credit for it. It's been transformed, but there are opportunities and threats coming all the time. And I think this is an opportunity that if grasped, really releases so much energy for people to focus on where they can add the value.
Did you look externally? Did you look at other sporting governing bodies?
Good point, Al. We looked at other bodies, not just in rugby, and we did look at other rugby bodies. And they have all traditionally grown up the way Scottish rugby has grown up. So I think if the clubs are visionary enough to approve this, this will be world leading. There will be no other body that has been seen to be as world leading in terms of the governance structure going forward than Scottish Rugby. So that's the hope I have for the new year.
And is that almost future proofing? Luke being ahead of the curve, seeing what may changes that may come along.
Yeah, I think you hope so. I mean, change is always such an incredibly difficult thing. But to be honest, you know, if this goes through, I'd feel very proud to have left a legacy for the future that I think is going to be for the good of everybody, and I think it's getting that clarity, and getting rid of the misunderstandings of how the whole system works, where people can see where they actually can be part of the obvious success that Scottish rugby is having and hopefully will have in the future.
And I suppose, sorry, Al, interrupting. I'm on a roll here. What What do you think it would mean, or does it mean anything for players?
I think for players,
club players, for all players, for players.
Well, I think all,
for kids, for
yeah,
players,
I think for all players. I mean, players. I think look, we hope that this review, if implemented, will be to the benefit, you know, on the international field, the professional field, the club field, the mini rugby field, and the rugby tots, by actually just identifying where people fit in their journey and how that journey takes you through. And you know, I'm the boy, and you know, people are say various things about me and say, look, can I give you the alternative CV? I was in the fifth 15 at school. I played football and I was good at squash. They were not interested in me at school. I went abroad for a year in Australia, and I came back and I went to university, and I just loved the club guys, the rugby guys. And I started my rugby career at university, and I was capped at 24. And rugby has taught me so much in terms of collaboration, resilience, working with teams of people. And I just think those qualities are such strong qualities. And you look at, you know, your values, which are respect, engagement, enjoyment, attainment, and leadership. These are all very strong qualities, which or values. And I think for anybody that's involved in rugby, they're all passionate. And as Al says, there's a huge amount of emotion, and you'll never keep everybody happy all the time. But the more people feel that they're helping to put that player on the park at Murrayfield, the more that we feel involved.
Which is the overall
goal.
That's a goal. It's a goal.
But also, I honestly, you know, I see that Scottish rugby has lifted the nation over the last few years because you're giving aspiration, you're giving inspiration, you're giving hope, and people are getting behind the team. And that's a wonderful thing to be associated with.
You know, what is your message to the clubs following this report being published today? We'll start with you, Norman.
Well, we started, as I say, with a clean sheet of paper, understanding how the existing organisation worked. And I wouldn't underestimate this at all. Of pretty much everyone we spoke to, there was a need for change coming through. And this is, remember, not, it's non-attributable, it's no minutes, people were absolutely open. And that is what has really driven Bill and me to come up with this structure, was that overwhelming need for change to be fit for the future. And that, I hope, is something that the clubs can see. Clearly, they'll need time to think about it and be talked through it. The report is as detailed as we can. You can only go so far without just swamping people with detail, but it shows a structure that should work. But as I said earlier, it'll only work if people make it work. But if the clubs are right behind this, it should work very well, and I would commend it.
Yeah, I'd say to the clubs that we've put an incredible amount of hours into this, and we've had a group of people who've been extremely helpful with their time, and we've also road tested as we've gone along the way. So there have been groups of people that have seen elements of what we were looking at, and we have been encouraged by the belief that actually this isn't an evolution, it's got to be radical. And because I think only by being radical and looking forward and forgetting the past will you get a new structure that everybody can buy into. Now, it may not work, little bits and pieces for different people, everybody will have a different view. But I take great confidence from the fact the board and the council have come out approving in principle, endorsing in principle what we're doing. And I'd say to the clubs, look, this is radical, but it's intentionally radical. It's pioneering, it's progressive, but it's positive. And I would just like to see huge positivity throughout Scottish rugby, and I think there's that opportunity, and that's what excites me.
The things that, just adding to that, that came through to me in this was that the people we spoke to, the growing recognition of the divergence between the club game and the professional game, and yet having a link between the two, was something that really should be focused on going forward. So that was the first thing. The second was sort of clarity and accountability of where people were in the organisation and where the clubs were in the organisation and the influence they could have. And the third was that there's a lot of misunderstanding out there about how Scottish rugby is run. And this report should help clarify a lot of that misunderstanding.
So we've talked a bit there about the grassroots and about the players coming through and how important that is ultimately as a governing body, and to your point, Bill, about the dream of playing out there. Part of this surely has to be to enable the business, if you like, to be flexible, to be able to make fast decisions at the right times, which ultimately have the benefit of the game and the grassroots in mind,
totally.
But to give that business the flexibility to do it in what is a very changing world in rugby terms.
I mean, totally, Al. I mean, one of the key things is obviously look at the sustainability of the game all the way through, and we all know that, you know, it's ticket sales and things that bring the income in. I think above anything, it is getting that clarity. Who's responsible for allocating the capital and the resources? Who's responsible for domestic game? Who's responsible for rest game? And where can decisions be made? And I think decisions need to be delegated. I think you need to give more opportunity for people to, my favourite saying, proceed until apprehended. Look, guys, we trust you. You're in the right place to make the right decisions. The key, though, is you must have a top board that covers all the bases of the skill set for you to have the confidence that we are fit for the future.
And with that kind of decision-making ability and the trust and the autonomy between the Professional Performance Board and the Rugby Development Board, that has to go between them, on your point, Norman. There has to be a link between
Correct.
The two.
Totally.
And quite often, I think, we follow the narrative that the professional, what will potentially become the Professional Performance Board, has to support the Rugby Development Board. But the Rugby Development Board has to support the professional arm.
Oh, totally.
Well. They're both of equal standing.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely equal standing, Chris. Yeah. And when you look at the organisation chart in the report, they have equal standing, and there's a bar between the two to show the link. That link will need to work itself out once people get into positions and people cooperating and understanding the fact that that link does have to work. But it's there, it's in the report, it hasn't been avoided.
I think actually there's a meeting at Murrayfield, I think, on the 15th of January to discuss the report and then requisition SGM, which will be slightly later. But I think from our perspective, we believe our job is done. We are able to take questions that will come through the website, or whatever, for things for us to consider. But I think the opportunity for us to have a direct conversation with clubs would be at Murrayfield on the 15th of January. I think it's up to the clubs to determine, obviously, the future. I'd be extremely disappointed if these recommendations weren't adopted, because I think they are good ones and I think they're for everybody's benefit, but it's entirely up to the clubs. Having said that, we are asking basically for a new constitution to be created. And once that new constitution is created, it'll be very clear who's responsible for doing what. But if the clubs are unhappy, they can at any point in time, they can requisition the number of votes to, you know, remove directors. But, you know, in my career, those things don't normally happen unless there's deep unhappiness about how something is being run and structured and organized. And I hope that this will be seen as an opportunity for the future.
Did you agree on everything? Or was there moments between the two of you?
Well, Bill and I worked pretty well together. I was chairman of Cairn Energy for 10 years and Bill was the chief executive. And during that period, Cairn went from a FTSE 250 company to a FTSE 100 company, which is a big company. And we had to organise the governance in Cairn at the time to suit that. So Bill and I worked pretty closely, and we're a good complementary team, I suggest.
Bill?
I think people know me for taking the brave pill, but actually I'm more conservative than you might think, and that's why I'm sitting next to Norman, who keeps my feet on the ground. And as a combination, I think we have a very wide skill set right across the world. And we've been privileged, I think, to have the opportunity to, you know, 6 months pro bono, most of our time working for Scottish Rugby on this review, because we feel it's a real responsibility. And in the report, I think Norman and I are absolutely as one. I don't think we have changed much at all from what we have believed is right. We have listened carefully, and your point about the board saying they're equally important, these points are in the report if you read. But when you have change, you must have strong leadership of the clarity of what you're trying to achieve. And I've been super encouraged by the number of people that are coming forward saying, this we can see really working, Bill. This is fantastic. And they've kept our energy levels through this because, you know, it's been a difficult process.
So sum it up for us, guys. You've put an awful lot of work into this. You've now got a completed document. Where are we? What do you see is in here?
I think it's radical, but I think it's pioneering, progressive, and positive for all the Scottish rugby, and I hope it's taken in that spirit, because we've worked very hard to listen to a lot of people, and I think there's a consensus for change. And the great thing is you can never change the past, but you can create the future. And I think there's a really exciting future under this structure.
Well, I think for me, I'd said earlier, this would be a world-leading, world-class structure. And I think for the clubs to be part of that, for the professional game to be part of that, and for everyone in the SRU to be working in an organisation that is seen to be, as Bill says, radical and bold, and to be world-class is the place to be.
And finally, hopefully, we're aligned as one.
As one.
Thank you very much, folks.
Right, good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you once again for listening to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. We'll be back next week with more exclusive content.